Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, and welcome to Stalking Time for the Moon Boys. With me, David Baddiel, and somewhere else, Tim Hinks. Hello.
Hello, David. We've gone back into lockdown, haven't we? So I'm now at home, you're at your house.
Yeah.
And we're on computers, and it's all, yeah, very alienating.
Yes, well, I'm going to let light in on magic here, and it's really a very magical thing indeed. Normally, when me and Tim record the podcast remotely from different places, we are asked by our various lovely producing folk to record the audio separately on our phones or elsewhere. And I think every time we've done that, Tim at some point afterwards says, "I think I've got most of it," which is a very depressing moment for us all. So, you know, if you're listening to this and it suddenly cuts out in a clear edit, clearly us then talking about 20 minutes later, that's Tim's fault.
It's. I can tell you now, it's recording, it's going swimmingly from a technical point of view, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
Is that all your guitars? Sorry, you can't see this, ladies and gentlemen. I'm assuming some women listen to this, who knows. I've never actually been inside your house. As you know, I've been in your garden. But I've never been inside your house, and I didn't realise you had like 5 guitars. Do you have more?
Do you mean
behind you?
I was trying to work out whether you were saying, "Is that all your guitars?" Or "Is that all your guitar?"
No, I'm not scoffing at the amount of guitars you have, because unless you were Eric Clapton, I might say, "Is that all your guitars?" But seeing you're Tim Hinks, I'm saying, "Is that all those are all your guitars?"
Yeah, I've got 6 here.
What's the best one?
The best one, the fastest is...
Fastest?
I was just trying to think, sort of saying, what's the best guitar?
They have sure wheels on them.
What criteria you'd go with. Okay. I like the Stratocaster at the moment. It depends what mood I'm in.
They change? What, are you a billionaire?
No, but what I mean...
You don't. You wake up one morning and you think, "Oh, I think I'm going to buy a Telecaster today."
I'm going to replace them with pianos today.
Yeah.
No, I mean, yes, I'm a billionaire, just if you want, because I don't want, it's factually yes.
Yeah.
But what I mean is, it's like, what's your favorite, which Bowie album you're listening to? You know, you're sort of suddenly in an Aladdin Sane mood or whatever. So it depends. Sometimes one guitar is just suddenly becomes my favorite, and then I'll change.
Okay. So, I mean, any burglars listening, you might not want me to say this, but that Les Paul behind you, is that a Gibson Les Paul?
Yeah, it is. Basically, next door to me, used in West London, I'm going to call it, because I'm actually thinking about burglars now.
What's the address exactly? What's the postcode?
it's in a capital city.
Yeah.
In one of the four capitals in the kingdom.
Yeah.
And end of my road, turn right. Yeah. There's a guitar shop called Chandler's Guitars. It's quite famous.
Anyone can Google that and pinpoint where your house is, but there we go.
Well, it's closed now. They take everything off Google.
Yeah, do they?
Yeah.
David Bowie's dead now. You can't find anything about him on Google.
Exactly. You can find loads. So there's this guitar shop just near me, and it was full of guitars.
Was it?
But okay. Really, really. And like the Rolling Stones used to go there, or Ronnie Wood used to go, and sort of quite famous people went. It was a proper, really good, a bit like the Denmark Street ones. It was really well regarded. It was here for 30 years. And it used to be run by a guy called Al, was really lovely.
Wasn't your hairdresser also called Al?
No, that's Al's Clip Joint.
Oh, yeah, Al's
but
Clip
it's not,
Joint.
It's unrelated.
Are you sure he's just not making up? Because I think in Happy Days, the burger joint was called Al's as well.
So I'm wondering
if you're just defaulting to Al. What's the name for anyone who runs a shop that you frequent? But
I'm pretty sure.
And it was Arnold's. It was Arnold's in Happy Days.
It was Arnold's, yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
So two things of note happened in that guitar shop for me. One is, and I used to buy guitars there, so I did buy a Gibson SG. So almost, when you bought a guitar there, you could sort of, if you got bored of it, you could sort of sell it back to them and then...
Really?
It's a shop. I mean, it's not...
But it still feels quite an odd business practice.
But it felt like safe. It felt safe to sort of buy...
It's shut, you say now. Closed down now.
I go every morning to check because I've got all these guitars.
You want to sell back to them. Yeah.
Yeah, they said I could come back anytime.
Yeah.
So one thing of note, just as it happens, Al, his dad was really wealthy. And I suppose that's probably how you can run a guitar shop. Like, you know, maybe you want to be a rock star, but you end up running a guitar shop. And he ran a really lovely guitar shop and he was a really nice guy. And his dad was quite wealthy. His dad made money. I'll give you one guess. If you get it.
Selling guitars.
It's got nothing to do with guitars.
I've got it wrong. That was my guess.
No, okay, well, I'll give you two guesses. If you get this guess right,
yeah.
I will give you all my guitars.
Okay. When was his wealth? Am I allowed a clue at all?
Okay, a clue.
Guitars are still included in the offer, even though you're giving me a clue, which wasn't in the original.
Well, I'm a bit worried about giving you a clue. You can take all my guitars but one and just leave the one. Just leave one of them with me.
Which one?
Well, you can decide.
Okay.
So, what my favourite is, but that's just this week.
Yeah.
So, it was something to do with being in the house.
Being in the house?
Being in a house.
Okay.
And that's how his dad made money. It's a household thing.
Right.
His dad invented it.
Burglar alarms.
Oh, God, I was actually slightly palpitating that you might just get it, and then I'd have to sort of honour it, I think.
You would, definitely. I'd definitely have taken the guitars.
Not burglar alarms. He invented Henry the Hoover.
Oh, no. Maybe I could have got that. If I'd really thought about the clue, it's something to do with the house, I might have got that.
It's the only one answer when you think about it. So he
invented the smiley-faced Hoover.
Yeah, and that's where the money came from to allow Al, I suppose, to run a guitar, have a go at running a guitar.
Do you think that Al's dad was frankly disappointed that his son owned a guitar shop with the money that has closed down? And that, therefore, I'm now picturing him as Henry the Hoover, but looking sad.
I see what you mean. I hope not, because Al was, and probably still is, a lovely guy. It was a famous guitar shop. It did pretty well. He didn't clean up like his dad did.
In both ways?
Yeah.
You were going for the pun there. That was the pun.
Yeah, you know, I didn't just go for it. I did it.
You really did it, yeah.
Yeah. So, but I hope he was proud of him. On a serious note, I hope he was proud of his son because he was lovely.
Yeah.
Two things of note.
Oh, wow.
One, downstairs in Chandler's, there was like a basement and it was full of guitar amps. So if you were looking at a guitar, you could go downstairs and try it out on one of, it was amazing, on one of sort of 50 amps, you could take your pick.
Right.
And once I was down there in a way that I still feel really good about, I was down there noodling away on a guitar and then the door opened and Al came in with a phone in his hand, like a landline.
Yeah.
And slightly took me by surprise. and said in that sort of, like they do on telly, like with his hand over the receiver so the person on the other end couldn't hear it, and said, "Tim, it's the missus." and
but your wife, not Al's wife.
No, okay. Exactly. My wife. And he was sort of basically saying, words to the effect of, "Shall I tell her you're here?" Or something.
Yeah. And so it was like a 1970s sitcom moment.
Totally, like being like, in the pub.
Yeah. Like the bloke, the funny bloke, Terry Scott. As he's gone off for, he's supposed to be doing the washing up or the he's one go at the laundry a year and he's bunked off to the guitar shop.
Exactly.
And Al's trying to help you out here.
He's trying to help me out, and I felt really like, God, I'm part of something really brilliant here for a second.
Okay.
I love the fact that Pippa, my wife, phoned the guitar shop to see whether I was there.
Yeah.
That also makes me feel good. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so is there a third one? I mean, I think we have to, we're tied to the stake now. You said there were three things.
Second one.
No. That was the second one.
Wasn't it? What I mean is, the thing about Henry the Hoover wasn't meant to be a moment. It was just a background.
So that was the first one.
Well, no, that was just a bit of colour before we got to the two notable things.
Okay, what's the other notable thing?
Oh, good. I didn't know if you'd be interested. The other thing is that there were various famous people went there. I don't think I ever saw any of them, as I've said. But I did bump into someone in my world who's quite famous. Well, very famous in the sense that they meant a lot to me at a certain point. And I'm not going to make you guess.
This is going to be a TV executive, isn't it?
No.
A producer.
It's going to be a person that was on TV, very much in relation to guitars, but not a music, well, probably a musician, not a famous rock star. It was a woman. And if I, okay, let me try it this way.
You going to give me your guitars if I get it?
No, because I'm going to tell you her name. Except that it might not mean anything to you.
Okay.
And so I'm going to say her name. I'll take a risk. If you get it right, I'll give you a plectrum.
Judith Howne from Tomorrow's World.
No.
Okay.
But good guess.
Yeah.
Right. Her is one name, a bit like Madonna, and it's like you'll either, you know, one name should be enough. Her name was Deirdre.
What, from Coronation Street?
No. I thought you were going to say that. No.
No, then I don't know.
Okay. So if I said Deirdre from Rock School.
No.
Oh, for God's sake.
I didn't watch Rock School.
Well, Rock School.
Is it like Rock Follies? No.
No, Rock School was like a music program for. Like, feels like it was after Grange Hill, or is that sort of that tea time thing. And it taught you about musical instruments, and Deirdre was the guitarist.
Really?
And she was quite, I think, a bit brummy from memory. She wasn't the most inspiring, but basically she used to play on effects pedals and play the guitar.
When you say one name, Deirdre, I'm pretty sure that's not like Madonna. I'm pretty sure that Deirdre is actually Deirdre Collins, for example, and you just knew her first name. You said it like...
I see what you mean.
She was just known as Deirdre. No one is just known as Deirdre, except perhaps the woman from Coronation Street. And even she, I think, does have a surname.
Yeah, I see what you mean. It's not, if you said, it's a good point. If you said, I think you'll understand what I mean by Deirdre from Rock School, you said, no. And I said, Deirdre Miggins from Rock School. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's true.
No, you're right.
Yeah. Also, if that surname happened to be from Rock School, if it was some weird sort of semi-Swedish name called from Rock School, that would be amazing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and a bit, but it was Deirdre from Rock School, and I felt pretty excited actually because I really, when you were, you know, before the internet, when you're trying to play a musical instrument, play guitar, and there was a BBC TV show that taught you, but had effects pedals and interviews with like Ozzy Osbourne and stuff, pretty exciting.
No, that sounds good. That sounds like the perfect person. I think we've talked in the past. I'm going to say it again. This very much eats itself, this podcast, but I think we've talked in the past about how my friend Tracy McLeod, who you know, once talked about a phenomenon that should be a German word for, of when people see people off the telly in the places they expect to see them. And she, because she used to present the Late Show,
CTV,
felt that whenever people saw her in an art gallery, she always thought they were thinking, of course she's here. Or if when I did fantasy football, if people saw me at football, you seeing Deirdre from Rock School at a guitar shop is exactly that.
And I was really interested to know, she was trying a guitar, I can't remember if... But yeah, it's very much in a natural habitat. Yeah, but like seeing a lion in the Serengeti. Actually, no, not in the Serengeti. That's desert.
Yes,
isn't it?
No, the Serengeti.
You get lions in.
Yes,
do you?
Yeah, I've been on safari. I'm pretty sure you get lions in the Serengeti, unless they're extinct in the same way that Deirdre may now be extinct. I hope not.
Well, let's hope not. When you're a kid, lions. If you were to draw a lion, you'd probably draw it in a jungle, wouldn't you? That's the point I was getting. I think that's the misconception, isn't it?
Yeah, but they're definitely in the savannah as well, and that's what the Serengeti is.
Is it? Okay. So yeah. It was like seeing a lion in the Serengeti. It was like, yes. Of course, that's exactly.
That's rather exactly
than a lion in Al's clip joint sitting in a chair.
Al's clip joint. Isn't clip joint also the name for, in Soho in the old days when strip clubs used to exist, were they also called clip joints?
Yeah. I think the clip thing is about nicking money, isn't it?
It's, yeah.
I think it describes the act.
But
of...
you mean cutting your hair?
Yeah.
I don't. Was it actually called Al's Clip Joint, your hairdresser?
Yeah, it's a good.
It was called Al's Clip Joint.
When I used to, now you mention it, I used to go in there and they'd say, "Why don't you buy a bottle of champagne?"
Do you want a bottle of champagne for £100?
And then Pete and the barber would dance.
And you wouldn't be allowed out until you'd spent an enormous amount on tips. Anyway, I should say we've called this podcast. I mean, obviously, you know, we occasionally just do it anyway, but we've called this podcast for a reason. It's meant to be a special. We've managed to talk for 15 minutes without getting to the reason, but I'm going to announce it now, which is it's meant to be a Stardust special. And by Stardust, I don't mean the film that came out in 2007, which was written by Jane Goldman and Neil Gaiman and Matthew Vaughan, I believe, but the film that just came out, which has got Johnny Flynn playing David Bowie in it. You may, listeners, I imagine the listeners of this podcast do know about it, so I don't really need
got to
go on and on about it. But we've been eagerly waiting for it for some time, and I saw it the other day, you saw it the other day, and I don't know whether a part of me wanted it to be better than it was or what.
Mm.
I mean... Partly that has nothing to do with David Bowie wanted it to be better than it was, because I like to think of myself as an original thinking, you know, person who doesn't go with the flow, that I, you know, have my own ideas about things.
Which is fitting, because you are the only person that thinks that about yourself, so that is exactly. actually proof, very... positive.
And I very much felt the prevailing wind about Stardust was this is shit, and unfortunately it was shit. There's no getting around it. I can't really come to you now, Tim, or listeners, with a redeeming feature of it. Even though I like Johnny Flynn as an actor, and he can sing. But as we know, number one problem, well, there are other problems, but number one problem is David Bowie, or the David Bowie estate, did not allow for any of his music to be in that film.
I mean, I, like you... I think basically it is shit, but I find it hard to completely dispense with it. I think there are, I don't know whether I'm just a bit romantic about it, but it, what I was thinking after it in the day, it's almost got better over time to the extent that I said to my daughter, Ava, we should watch it together because she likes Bowie like Dolly, your daughter does. And it's not so shit that I wouldn't sit with her and watch it. And I was trying to work out why that was.
No, but that's, and, when I watched it with Dolly, part of what we were doing, which I'm sure you were doing as well a bit, was feasting on the wrongness of it from the perspective of people who feel, rightly or wrongly, that they really know about David Bowie. So the endless small errors it was making were meat and drink to us watching it.
I think that's true. I mean, there's another way of thinking, partly what I was thinking afterwards, but I don't know how true this is that, you know, like those stories that people of a certain generation will tell, that when they first heard, you know, the Beatles or whatever, you know, they would listen to it under the covers on Radio Caroline or something, could
barely
hear
that
hear
a lot, yes. I'm never entirely sure why they would have to go under the covers.
I think
they could just turn it down a bit.
Why would they? Or maybe I'm conflating. Is it?
No, you're right. That is the myth. But now I think about it, I'm not entirely sure why it has to be under the covers.
I think to stop outside noise.
Is the idea that your mum and dad in conservative 1963... or whenever Radio Caroline would come in and say, "Stop, turn that racket down, and listen to the light service."
I mean, there seems to be, without, I don't want to go off the plot or anything, but there seems to be two things that are nowhere near as good as films, and I mean, probably more than that, but two particular things that television and film have made seem really good and are really shit. One is being under the covers for any length of time.
Yeah.
Like, I think after about 7 seconds, you want out.
Yeah. So, well, I'm going to have to add to that, even though we're going off the point. In one of my children's books, The Boy Who Could Do What He Liked, there is a scene in which the boy does something, which was in fact told to me by my friend Paul Morris when I was at Habonim camp, the Jewish youth camp that I used to go to, which is a game that he used to play, apparently, whereby, I think he did it with his brother. He used to share one with his brother, and I mean, they were young, they were like 12. It would be weird if they were older. And Paul would fart in the bed.
Right.
And then they would have to go to the bottom of the bed both of them, and come up again. And he called that game Escape from Farty Harbour. I've always really liked Harbour, I have to say.
Yeah.
Harbour is great. But it has always slightly put me off the idea of being under the covers. Whenever I imagine being under the covers, I think this is a bit like Escape from Farty Harbour.
I think it's airless. I think it's just...
Escape from Farty Harbour was airless.
Yeah, so I think that is nowhere near as good as everyone makes it sound. And that's why I don't quite believe those stories, the romantic story. The other thing that's nowhere near as good as people make it out to be on telly and films is having a glass of wine in a bath. I think that is utterly rubbish.
Yeah.
You get hot. It's an awkward angle. Yeah. You lie back and you think, oh God, I better get up again and have a glass, drink because it's getting warm.
Yeah.
It's got this weird sensation of being in bubbles and heat, but having wine go down your throat. It's just, it's rubbish, isn't it?
Yes, although I think wine on telly and on film to some extent, especially like American films, it's often there's a sense in which adulthood is signified by a very big glass.
Yes.
Enormous glass that somebody's pouring glug wine into, and you think, right, this is supposed to say we are all sophisticated, comfortable grown-up adults. Look at us with this wine. And I think, if someone then takes it into the bath, it's supposed to be ultimate luxuriousness.
It's absolutely supposed to be take some me time, indulge yourself. And actually, what it is like, why don't you start multitasking even when you're relaxing, and why not take the pleasure out of both wine and the bath?
Yes.
And I'm really, if there is a petition, if there's a move, I would sign it.
Can I go back to Stardust? I know you, these are important things, but
right.
We could go back to Stardust for a second. Can I just raise a few issues? I don't know how many you had, but I'll begin with Angie Bowie in that film is played. Now, see, I mean, I'm prepared to open my mind here, right? Angie Bowie in that film is played by an American actress.
Yeah.
Doing a not very good English accent, and Angie Bowie is, of course, American. Now, someone out there, and perhaps you, a Bowie nerd, may be about to tell me, no, in the 70s, it's well known, if you really know your stuff, Angie was always affecting a British accent.
But hang on, she is American. She's got an American accent, Angie.
Angie Bowie has, but that actress was playing her British, or sort of half Australian, sort of... It wasn't American.
No, it didn't feel... I would just zoom out slightly because I think that's an important issue, Angie. And also,
that sounded like you were calling me Angie. It really sounded like it.
How did that feel?
I quite liked it. I quite liked it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's stick with that.
Yeah.
Angie's really interesting. Not you. You're not interesting. The other Angie's really interesting because she's made it. It's basically they've done a sort of Yoko of mythology and made her utterly evil. Sort of literally when David's having a breakdown, she's like, oh, for God's sake, leave me alone, it's late. It's a really...
That's sort of the accent she's doing.
Right, yeah, that's well,
which
my
an element, had an element of the laughing gnome to it, I thought, when you just now. Oh, come on, David. Just a slight element of that to it.
More Dalek.
Slight Dalek-y.
But there's also a sense in the film that what they've done is they've put it together and gradually bits start falling off, but they think, well, let's just go with it. So they've got an actress who doesn't have the right accent and won't do the right accent. Most people are about 20 years older than their parts.
Everyone's too old.
Should be, right. There's a lot of Australian in it, which is far... I mean, obviously, some of my best friends are Australian, but it feels very much
are
like...
They?
What?
Are they actually?
One good friend is Australian.
Okay.
But she's not my best friend.
Right.
So there's a lot, and in the music, no music.
Do you think that actually happened? Can I just stop you there? Surely it's the case that, I can't remember the name of the director, it's gone now.
No, I can't.
But they got it together, I don't know at what stage, and presumably thought they were going to get the music at that stage, I don't know, and then didn't, and then thought, oh, fuck it, we're going to do it anyway.
You would definitely start, whatever, with the notion you're going to use the music. But there's no question they didn't sort of at some point apply to the Bowie estate and say, can we use the music?
I know, but it's so weird to sort of start production. I mean, we both work in television and I've made films, and I don't understand how such a key element of it would be something that you'd just leave to chance or, think, that'll happen.
Yeah.
And then when it doesn't, think, okay, we'll work around it.
I think that the one thing I said to you, and I don't know if in the end I believe this or whether I was just trying to, is that there is an argument you can run, which is that it's better without his music, which I know sounds odd, but which is to say, it's not trying to be Rocket Man, or it's a very particular moment in time. And somehow I feel that if there's any saving grace about it, and I'm not sure there is, it's almost to take it away from the Bowie-ness and make it more about someone a bit kooky who's struggling to try and make the big time. And it's a sort of slice of that early 70s singer-songwriter struggling. And actually, if you'd have had Changes, or, you know, would it have made it sort of more ridiculous because it's so far? I don't know. I mean, probably.
Well, yeah, but the big problem with that is, I mean, firstly, I think with all these things, I think with the Jimi Hendrix film, and interestingly enough, I don't know if you saw Sylvia was a film about Sylvia Plath and Ted Hughes. They weren't allowed to use the poetry in that. And then you just think, who are these people that you're representing here? Because I think that's what, without this stuff, they're just ordinary people.
Yeah.
David Bowie, without David Bowie's songs, is just an ordinary person. There's a notion of him as like somehow mythic anyway. He isn't. He's only mythic with the music.
I couldn't agree more.
If you actually imagine his life without the music, he would probably have worked in Chandler's.
But in a way...
That's the guitar shop, by the way, for anyone who's forgotten. That's the guitar shop, right?
I fully agree. I think that you almost want to show that film to anyone who's about to say something about Bowie on his anniversary or whatever, because what it might stop that trend, which is he was what's interesting about Bowie is the clothes he wore.
Yeah, I know
the
all
look,
that. Yeah,
it is, how weird, and it's not what's interesting at all.
It is quite a good example of how that's right. And I know something we've said many, many times, that it's the music. But what is the fucking song that they play at the end? Dolly seemed to think it was a song that the Spiders from Mars did, because for anyone who hasn't seen it, Bowie in it, Johnny Flynn, does play a number of covers that Dave Bowie did actually do, Amsterdam, My Death. But then he also, at the end, sorry, this is a spoiler alert, not really, because it is sort of a biopic, so if you're listening to this, you probably know this, that when he finally creates, it's an origin story after all, he finally creates Ziggy Stardust, they go to the Friars Aylesbury on, one of their first big gigs, and they don't open with, say, 5 years, which is what they probably would have opened with. They open with, I don't know what it is. Goes on for like 5 minutes. Like when in Bohemian Rhapsody, they do Bohemian Rhapsody at the end of it, right? And you think, yes, that's fitting. But have you any idea what that song is?
Yes. I mean, the truth is, every song I knew, right? And so I know, but I just cannot remember. I can't. What's he doing when they're singing?
Song in the movie. So they come on, they play a kind of Stooges song, it sounds like to me, a kind of thrash, punky song, even though it's before punk.
I mean...
What is it?
I honestly can't remember. I mean, the truth is I'm now looking it up because I knew every... There's nothing there that I didn't know, and I'm sure it's
because you don't know this.
Well, except I just can't remember. I just literally can't. I know all the songs.
Okay, it's by far the longest bit of music in it. That's really what I think is amazing, is that your point about, well, by not using Bowie's songs, they take it away and make it into a more, kind of generalised film about the 70s and singer-songwriting becoming glam rock or whatever. I mean, that would be true were it not for the fact that you are, I think, supposed to watch 5 minutes of this song and think, yes, this is this person becoming who he's meant to be. But all you're thinking is, what the fuck is this? What terrible noise. Because it's not a great David Bowie song.
I literally can't remember. I mean, I know that not everything there, they were mining his cover versions, that is a song I knew.
Are you not finding it?
I can't.
Last song in Stardust. We have to talk about one other thing. Well, many, many other things, if we're going to do the Stardust special. But you texted me, you were watching it slightly before me, to say that it was the worst Mark Bolan you'd ever seen, and you've seen Jack Whitehall play him. I mean, the Mark Bolan... Again, spoiler alert, but the movie begins after an initial sort of cold opening. It begins at Haddon Hall, and there's some slightly tiresome 70s kind of sex games going on and drugs and blah, blah, blah. And David comes downstairs and there's beautiful women kind of fawning around him. He's done Space Oddity by now, but he's kind of struggling beyond that. And in his kitchen, for some reason, is Mark Bolan, who may have been at Haddon Hall, but who would have been a massive, massive star at that point in time.
Yeah, and he's spouting terrible poetry.
Something
out of Viz.
Yes, I felt very sorry for Mark Bolan, who, he's dead, so I don't think he's bothered about it. But, not only was he played by a bloke who was about 58 and yeah. who looked like, I described him on Twitter as looking like a Charles II lookalike.
Yeah.
With all the syphilis and all the rest of it. But he's portrayed as an absolute pretentious twat who right at the end of the movie, when David Bowie and the Spiders are playing that terrible song, there's a close-up of him in the audience looking as if, ah, yes, I realise I have passed on the flame. This is the Jesus to my John the Baptist. And you're just thinking, no, it isn't, because it's a terrible song.
Well, but on top of that, the thing I felt is that they show that he's basically at the front of the mosh pit, Mark Bowie. Yes. So the idea that Bowie wouldn't have given him a decent ticket, and he's sitting right at the front, is absolutely ridiculous.
I'm not absolutely convinced he'd have gone to Aylesbury at that point in time.
Well, there's also that.
Basically, most of the movie, like 9/10 of the movie, is David Bowie and Mark Maron. David Bowie played by Johnny Flynn, and Mark Maron playing the only guy in Mercury, his American company, who believes in David Bowie at that point in time. Traipsing around America, not able to play any proper gigs, playing a few parties, embarrassing parties, and doing some terrible radio interviews. That, I think, is true, by the way.
Yeah, definitely.
That happened.
And don't you think, just pause, that to me was kind of, I was okay with that, because that just felt like the sort of thing, you know, a British star going to America, trying to make it, that felt all right to me, you know, sort of moderately interesting.
It's all right. I mean, I, to be honest, I like Johnny Flynn. I wasn't convinced by Johnny Flynn's Bowie. It just felt like a fey, shy character.
No, although didn't you think sometimes, in certain lights, he looked exactly like Bowie? There was, at that period.
No, I thought there was one thing that was good in the movie, and that was the costumes.
And his teeth.
His teeth were good, and the costumes were good. You know, the clobber was pretty good, and he wore the right clothes, especially in the, you know, hunky-dory period and all that stuff. There's one terrible moment. Sorry, I've just got to come up. Yeah. One fucking incredible moment. So clearly the ban extended to even quoting lyrics. So there's one bit where he's being interviewed by someone from Rolling Stone or someone, and they quote Man Who Sold the World, only they don't. They quote...
Yes.
The Kipling poem about the bloke on the stair. What is it?
I met a man
on the stair. He wasn't there. What was it? What is the... What's the Kipling?
Something like, I met a man on the stair. He wasn't there again today. That one.
The one that Kermit sings, doesn't he? Doesn't Kermit do a version
of
it?
Does he?
Yeah.
It's like, he wasn't there again today. I wonder if he'll go away or something.
And they quote that as if that are the lyrics of Man Who Sold the World. Which they're not. Halfway down the stairs. Is that something different?
No, that's different. Isn't that sitting... That's this very sad song he sings.
That's
about
Robin the Frog. Here it is. Hang on.
That's not Kipling, I'm pretty sure.
Robin the Frog. Is that a different from the poem about being halfway down the stairs?
I'm pretty sure. It just happens to mention stairs in it. I don't think it's anything
else. Isn't the man on the stairs also halfway down the stairs?
I don't think so. I think you're thinking about there's a mouse with clogs on.
I am thinking about that. Well, I'll tell you something interesting, which is that the writer and previously comedian Mark Billingham started complaining to me about Stardust and mentioned the bit with Man Who Sold the World. And I think I said, yeah, they might as well have done the one by Kermit. And he liked it. And I now realise he must have had no idea what I was talking about. but there we go.
It's as much... What is it? Sorry, just this isn't that. What's the little mouse with clogs on? What's that?
I've never quite known what the little mouse with clogs on is.
I saw a mouse there on the stair.
Yeah. The little mouse with clogs. Where on the stair?
That's right.
I mean, to be honest, any of these things could have been inserted in that moment for this is what you... Because the guy actually says to him, I think the journalist says to the David Bowie character, what does it mean? And you kind of think like, well, David didn't write that. So he can't answer that unless he just does some literary criticism of the Kipling poem.
Here's what the song was.
What Man Who Sold the World?
It's from Pin-Ups.
Oh.
No, sorry. The song you're thinking of is from Pin-Ups.
Oh, you found it.
And it's I Wish You Would.
Ah.
That's the one, isn't it?
So it's a cover of who?
I think it's Yardbirds or it's Them or one of those, Jeff Beck or...
Right.
Yeah, it's not even one of the big songs on Pin-Ups, which is interesting.
No. I mean, what it means is the other songs on Pin-Ups, CMD Play, Friday On My Mind, whatever... were also too expensive for Stardust. They chose the cheapest song on Pin-Ups. Can I just tell you, from my own experience, because I've spoken to the Pink Floyd people about doing a Syd Barrett biopic, which I'm interested in trying to write. Yeah. I can tell you that See Emily Play would definitely have cost them a lot of money. So I'm sure it's not because they liked that song.
Right, no, fair enough. But I think what's interesting is that in the biopic, okay, it's one thing not to have any music whatsoever, but it's sort of worse, isn't it, to say, well, imagine him, this isn't Bowie, this is an actor playing him, but imagine him singing other people's songs. In other words, assume he just didn't write anything.
Yeah.
And he just...
Assume he was a covers artist. Sort of, yeah. Assume he was a really, really important covers artist. Yeah.
It's worse. Would it be worse? Okay, the one thing that would be worse would be to write original songs for him, wouldn't it? That would be worse.
So, well, no, I don't agree with that, because that is what happens in Velvet Goldmine.
Oh, yeah, good point.
And I much prefer Velvet Goldmine.
Yes, okay.
Actually, do you know what Velvet Goldmine actually is? Sorry, this is getting very nerdy now. But Velvet Goldmine, which is a film I like, is half songs written for the film and half things like Steve Harley and Cockney Rebel songs.
It's also got Velvet Goldmine in, right?
And has it got Velvet Goldmine in it? Actually, got Velvet Goldmine in it. So it does have a Bowie song in it.
Well, so I'm just saying...
I don't know if it does, actually.
Maybe it doesn't. That'd be so weird.
I can't remember if it does or not. But it does, like, it has Sebastian in it. Which is a good, weird song by Cockney Rebel in it. I sort of prefer, what's his name? Jonathan Rhys-Meyers' character in that. But it's a much better director. It's Todd Haynes, isn't it? It's a much better director.
Yeah. Well, okay, I'll rephrase it. What would be really bad is if the people behind this particular film wrote original songs.
Yes, that would be fun. Oh, my God.
Because they would all be about space.
They'd all be about space. But here's another thing about Stardust, which is... I mean, this might just be sort of specific to the moment, but there were bits in it I thought, oh, this is kind of is a film for Bowie nerds, because I know it leads to his epiphany about being like an impersonation of a rock star instead of a real rock star, but it's a very nerdy thing that Bowie was in New York, that he didn't have a good time meeting Andy Warhol, and then he met Doug Yule of the Velvet Underground and thought it was Lou Reed.
Yeah.
You know, that is something that happened, but it's like, I think we talked about it, having discovered it on like season, if I can say that, 4 or something. And there's other strange things like that, like, for example, Woody and Trevor are in it, very carefully recreated, like Trevor's sideburns, which you all know, which are long and sort of grey and black. They're very carefully recreated, but they don't actually get any names. At no point does anyone call them Trevor or Woody. In fact, Mick Ronson, I think, just about gets a name check. And so I can't work out if this film has been made by Bowie people or not, really, is my point.
Yeah, so that's really interesting, because it's like a sort of selection of Q magazine anecdotes that they've sewn together. I don't know, I thought the spiders bit, from memory, was quite sort of true to form, other than, again, you've got this terrible thing constantly of thinking, well, should we show Mick Ronson playing the... You know, like, there's nothing... You can't... It's like watching a film about... What were those spate of films about racing car drivers, like Niki Lauda and, Senna and all those? It's like sort of just seeing them on the way to the racetrack and then waiting for them to come home again and just not being... So, in that sense, I thought they did quite a good job. I suppose you could say they spent quite a lot of time with him not on stage. You know, the actual stories, you say, going around America in the back of the car and all that. And I suppose what I did come away with was the feeling of, I mean, I had this feeling anyway, but it was a really hard road and he really had to keep going, Bowie, as we know, and had this incredible self-belief and all of that. And it's a sort of reminder, but then frankly, I could remind myself of that.
Yes.
Without sitting down watching.
I mean, there's this one bit where he's a, he goes to America and the Martin Maron character, whose name I can't remember, he's Ron, is it? Anyway, that character, I mean, actually, I sort of like, as someone who has occasionally found himself thinking, this is very shit and I have to do the gig, I sort of felt that was true enough, that he takes him to his first gig and it's basically a corporate for some Hoover company, not Henry the Hoover.
Yeah, not Henry the Hoover.
Hoover, but for some American Hoover company.
Yeah.
And here's the problem with that, right? Is that the idea of David Bowie playing that is kind of comic and poignant and full of pathos if he's up on stage doing the Bewley Brothers. Do you know what I mean? Because then you've got the juxtaposition of this incredibly naff situation with this unbelievably brilliant song. But the minute he does a cover, you just think like, well, yeah. I mean, this is just a covers bloke, as they would have probably at such an event. They'd have a covers band.
What did he, on the Hoover convention, did he do... New Amsterdam. What did he do? He did something.
There's Amsterdam. I think he does Amsterdam. Well, actually, there's one point where he says, this is a song by a band I really like, and I have no idea what that is. I think he
does
that.
Is that not the Yardbirds one?
No, that's the one at the end.
Okay.
And I don't know what it is, the song he says, this is by a band I really like.
Right.
At other points in it, he does Amsterdam, and the closest thing for me to him sounding actually like David Bowie is when he does My Death, which is a great song and is a song that Bowie carried on doing.
Yes.
Right into, he's doing it on David Live and stuff, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I've got to say, I mean, you're right, and it's quite difficult to sing My Death without sounding like David Bowie, I think, because it's.
I think you could sound like Jacques Brel if you tried to sound like that. Like,
funny enough, I don't know if I've ever actually heard the Jacques Brel version. I think I must have.
Is it in French?
Yeah, but I'm not racist about the French. If that's what you, that's not why. Why
is it called La Morte? No, what's you can speak French, can't you?
Well, no, it needs to be possessive, so yeah. It'd be. Montmort. Well, I don't know. That seems a bit odd.
Yeah, it's certainly the way you've done it. It sounds a bit odd. Just Montmort. Montmort. See, I tried to see it then, but then I can't translate the rest of it.
What's the first line? My death waits
behind the door or something.
Montmort attend. What's behind?
I don't know, but I think listeners, you should know that I'm looking at Tim with headphones on, and so it's now become like a really, really bad version of being in a language laboratory in 1978. I feel I have to repeat what you're saying to me.
Écoutez et répétez.
I used to love. I mean, this. I don't wish to become 70s nostalgic, even though this whole podcast is. But we had a language laboratory at my school, and. I wasn't very good at languages, but I did think going into the language laboratory was the height of technological advancement at the time. I sort of was amazed that I was in a what appeared to be, to my mind at the time, a soundproofed booth with headphones on and buttons I could press that would have a person speak to me in French.
Is the language laboratory, because as you say, that was
now...
no longer a thing because everything's kind of laboratory. Like, because it had to be a very special, almost like a sort of designated area for listening to things on tape.
Well, we both got children, so we could ask them, but neither of my children have ever said to me, we did French today. We were in the language lab. I had them said to me that. So that means all those quite big rooms that were absolutely set up for that with quite, you know, loads of booths and loads of wires and plug-ins.
Yeah.
Presumably they've just been dumped and now they're other classrooms.
I mean, that must be true. I mean, I'm going to ask them. My kids go to a school where you have to learn two languages as a minimum. Three.
Three?
English.
Oh, right, English. Okay.
I mean, they're not learning English.
I don't count that learning. As a... no. Who counts that as learning a language?
Well, what I mean is... So they have two non-core languages in Module B. Two in Module B and one in Module A.
Okay. Right, good.
And it would be probably something like that. And they've never mentioned, God, it's all bloody, you have to get there early because there's so much like sci-fi stuff to prep for and things to plug in. I imagine they do it on their, why am I talking about
this? I don't know. We've gone down the language laboratory route. So that's end of part one of what I'm going to call our Stardust special. And we'll be continuing to talk about Stardust and probably a lot of things not to do with Stardust in the next edition of Stalking Time for the Moon Boys.
Wow.
That was a bit too professional, wasn't it? It had a slight local DJ element to it.
That was Radio 2.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.